It's
called Punch Drunk.
The punches weren't really necessary. Maybe
they were super necessary.
Welcome to episode 93 of the Punch Drunk Podcast, your favorite combat sports podcast, hosted by two dudes who can't fight and know way less about fighting than they think they do. I'm your host, Lewis, and I'm joined once again by my man, Jamie. What's going on, brother? How are you doing?
Oh, man, just living the dream. I wish I didn't stay up for that one, but it was pretty good all around. I enjoyed a couple of the fights last night. Pretty happy.
Well, I didn't stay up for that one because having a three-month-old child makes me have to pick and choose the battles these days. And I enjoyed whizzing through the fights this morning, eating my breakfast, drinking some coffee, catching up, doing some notes for this. And I got to say, there's a few fights I was very glad to be able to fast forward. But it has
the baby, mate. Sorry, can't resonate with that one.
No. Someone you can resonate with, though, probably is poor old Rafael Fiziev. It looks like he just exploded his knee. And as a man who, within the last week, has had an ACL repair surgery, talk to me. What's going on?
Yeah, man, it looked so. It was kind of sickening. I think everyone thought it was going to be like an ankle or a leg break, and that would have just been life shattering. But obviously, like after it pulled up, it looked like it was a left knee injury. So, you really really hope that it's not an ACL, because that's quite a long recovery time being. And I know about those, but obviously not from a professional fighting standpoint. It, like, that would greatly impact training, the recovery, just coming back into it. So I hope we figure out what the actual injury is soon, and he gets to, he's going to have the right recovery. He's going to have the right people around him. You know, he's probably made a bunch of money from just, stonking people in the UFC. So hopefully that they can get some stem cells in there, get some Rogan stem cells.
Oh, dude, I was going to say, you're saying, it takes a little bit of time, a long recovery. One, and I don't mean to put you down here, but I don't think you're quite the same caliber of athlete. And, specimen as old Rafael Fiziev. And two, I don't think the hospitals in which you've been getting your knees repaired at over the past few years of your life are to the same standard of what Rafael's going to be getting. And he's based out of Thailand. He's going to be getting those crazy over-the-counter pharmaceuticals. He's going to be absolutely well on his way. He'll probably be back inside 9 months.
Let's hope so, huh? I was really, really looking forward to this fight, but I think it's one of those situations that it keeps coming up when it gets to like the two guys that are just amazing at what they do, both, specialists, and they end up coming against each other, and I love both of them. I don't want to pick, one guy or the other. You know, whenever, Gaethje fights someone, in the top, it's like that feeling of I don't want to choose one way or the other. And
it's a real Sophie's choice.
this is the choice. But otherwise, the fight was looking good. I thought, he is so fucking dangerous and explosive, man. He had a couple of combinations where he's firing four shots and they all land, and you're just like, oh! No, thank you.
Yeah, his balance is crazy. His takedown defense is good, but honestly, the way the fight was going, he doesn't have the greatest gas tank in the world. It was scheduled for five, and Gamrot is just a conditioning monster. And I think it not the way he wanted to get the win for sure, and anything could happen. But I just had a feeling that Gamrot was going to slowly take over that fight into the later rounds. Hopefully, at some point, these boys run it back, because they're going to be hanging around the top of the division for a while, and probably not going to be breaking into the very, very top, title, top two or three guys in the division either. So I'd like to see that one run back, but it's just a real shame for Fiziev to end on this way. But nice for Gamrot to get the win, and he moves on ahead.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, it's only Gamrot's only loss out of the last six is Benil Dariush. I mean, that's aging, fairly nicely, isn't it?
Yeah.
So of his last seven, he's pulling off quite a good set of wins. So hopefully he gets in the top five, and maybe it'll propel him to greater glory. Let's see.
We can only hope. And his loss to Guram Kudzeladze in his debut split decision was, let's say, questionable. He's probably had that look come back the other way with the Armin Sarukian fight. There was an argument when Sarukian, it's just swings and roundabouts when you the top guys are fighting one another. But he was a monster, man. He was a two-weight champion in KSW, and he's come over to the UFC and continued that hype. So it's always good to see Matheus Gamrot, and he just seems like a fun, nice dude as well. Let's move on to the co-main event, and old farm boy Bryce Mitchell, the Arkansas blanket, as some people call him. Just absolutely unbelievable. His striking isn't great, and it seems like he doesn't spend any time developing his striking. Like, you see him behind the scenes, he's just working pads on the farmland with just some random dude who's just holding pads for him. Like, he is so one-dimensional, but he's so good at what he does. It's unbelievable. I love Bryce Mitchell, man. He's obviously a character. He's hilarious.
He's such a character, man. Like, the fact that he beat Edson Barboza, like, and it was pretty clear that he did so. It's like against such a top level striker.
Dude,
like,
he dropped Edson Barboza.
Like, what the fuck? Like, and you see Edson Barboza these days. That, like, if you're talking about the perfect male physique, that man has fucking tickets for days. Like,
I thought you were gonna talk about me for a second then, but continue about Edson Barboza.
Yeah, close second. I'll go Edson first, and then followed by old mate who was our Aussie last week, Carl Solberg. Bryce Mitchell, he is such a weird and wonderful character, and I think we were talking last week about, like, I love a little bit of chaos, but Bryce and his, like, you know, he's on the Bisping podcast yelling at him because he's like, do you believe we came from monkeys? And he's like, no, and like, you know, Bisping says he believes in evolution, and he starts screaming. And then he brings the Bible into the cage with him. He makes...
That was like a throwback to the original UFC days when Kimo would come out carrying a literal cross to the octagon and was always exhausted by the time he got there. He's like, this is my mission, brother. It was just incredible. And yeah, obviously the post-fight Bisping was like, I am not giving them it was so good. And I love it. He's always got and it was so nice. He's like, you know, people might want to call him crazy. People might, you know, want to skid him or whatever. But I tell you what, whenever there's like, causes going on, he's always like the first one after the fights to be like, I'm putting up my own money towards this. He did it last time. He's done it now he's giving money to Danny Gay to distribute around Hawaii. He's just like, you know, he's quirky. He's a character. He's eccentric, but he seemingly has a good heart. And he's just, you know, he's just phenomenal at what he does. Extremely one-dimensional, but he's got a gas tank for days. He will just, because he doesn't have any muscle. Dude doesn't do any strength and conditioning workout. He doesn't have to. He's got that innate strength that just comes from years growing up in the deep countryside, wrangling farm animals and close blood relatives. It's just it's just innate to Bryce Mitchell. So I love watching him compete. He's got a ceiling on his MMA career, of course, but Dan Ige is no slouch on the ground, and to dominate him like he did, you just show that he's a serious MMA grappler, and he'll never be a champion, I don't think, but he'll always be entertaining, and he'll always offer us a submission threat. And so because of that, people will always have to be careful how they strike with Bryce Mitchell, because if they overextend or they get out of position for a second, they're going for a ride and they're getting tapped out.
100%, man. And the fact that Dan Ige's never been finished is fucking astounding. Like, every single one of his losses has been a unanimous decision, actually. So, and the fact that Bryce couldn't put him out was pretty crazy. I mean, he got close a couple of times, and he's always, as you say, he's like a big wet blanket on the guy, constantly like slamming him down to the ground. And this is kind of something that I really like, and it's probably good for the MMA casuals as well, is the fact that if you are one dimensional and you are like a takedown submission artist, when you watch Bryce Mitchell, it's not like he's just like wrestle fucking you against the cage and just holding you down, not doing damage. He is constantly looking for submissions, constantly looking to advance his position, constantly posing that threat. And it's exciting to watch because you can, you know, he's pulling off twisters. He's pulling off like, you know, like weird submissions that you don't often see as well. So,
100%.
Yeah, it's exciting, man. I love seeing that this side of MMA, and hopefully it resonates with more of the casual crowd as well, who just generally want to see people swang and bang.
Without question, Bryce Mitchell is single-handedly making grappling for rednecks cool. It's these guys just usually want to see a slobber knocker in a car park, but it's great to see. One thing about Dan Ige. He's one of these unfortunate guys that he's more entertaining, but he's basically a Neil Magny type character just in the featherweight division. The only losses he's had since his UFC debut, coming in off the Contender Series, are to guys who've all been ranked basically inside the top 10. Okay, Korean Zombie's retired now, but you look at his losses: Josh Emmett 6, Calvin Cater 7, Movsar Evloev 9, Bryce Mitchell 10. Like, he only loses to the top guys in the division. And there's no disgrace and there's no shame in losing to these absolute killers in one of the most stacked, deepest divisions in all of mixed martial arts. So, big fan of Dan Ige. And, you know, he put it on Mitchell in the first round as well. So it wasn't a shutout by any stretch of the imagination. And as you said, didn't finish him either.
It's really actually quite good that the doctor didn't stop that, because Bryce Mitchell's eye was pretty much closed, cutting the bottom, cutting the top, pissing out blood. It did not look like it could even open his eye. So I'm really glad that it continued on to the end of it, because we've had a few of those early stoppages lately. And even earlier in the fight, the Michelle Waterson Gomez fight, that was pretty close to getting stopped and just people pissing out blood.
Well, that one probably should have been stopped, and that was a nice little segue, because for people who couldn't see out of their eyes, Michelle Waterson is going to wake up and not be able to see her crying child, who she thought would be a great idea to bring to the fight to watch. I mean, when an MMA fighter is going to learn not to bring their like under 10-year-old children to see them get absolutely flogged to death, especially when you're going against Marina Rodriguez and you're Michelle Waterson and she's lost now like 6 of her last 7. There was only one way that fight was ever going. Imagine bringing your child, your little daughter, to see mummy just get elbowed through the canvas by a referee who you clearly owe money to because he has no interest in stopping that fight. Oh my goodness.
The only win in the last, 7, 8 fights? 7? Is that 8? Is Angela Hill, so that's not fucking hell, man. I mean, if she can't see what's going on in the fight after, she's not going to see a fucking UFC contract ever again.
A split decision win over Angela Hill. And you know what? Everyone knows how I feel about Angela Hill. I think she absolutely sucks. And she's like a 500 fighter in the UFC. Like, she's just not good. 15-13. But in that fight, if I recall, she went through a series of split decision losses where she was just getting hosed. And I'm pretty sure that was one of those fights. So Michelle Woods is basically hasn't won a fight since 2019 against Karolina Kowalkiewicz. So tough decisions to be made for the karate hottie. And I just gotta drop in a little soundbite here, because it's one of my all-time favorite clips, and it sums up my feelings on karate pretty perfectly.
Hey, well, I get to learn karate.
Karate? The Dane Cook of martial arts? No. ISIS agents use Krav Maga.
Krav?
We've got an ex-Mossad guy. He comes in on Thursdays.
Neato.
Yeah. Tuesdays, he does a really rigorous spin class.
So, well...
Dude, that man, you see, you know, I think the days of the Paige Van Zants and stuff like that, and like the girls that come in with this, you know, this extra sex appeal, and they want to throw all these like spinning cool kicks and stuff like that. Those days are over, man. But like these, the girls that are coming through here, like, you know, you can be absolutely beautiful, but you can be fucking skilled and deadly at the same time as well. Like it isn't just this this promotional tool anymore. It doesn't work, because when you get to the top of this division, like, I mean, obviously she fought Joanna, so like, you know, obviously had a bit of hype behind her, lost, goes against Carla Esparza, lost, because these people actually have some skill, won against Angela Hill to give her a little bit of like steam back, but Angela Hill, as we know, not the cream of the crop when it comes to skill in terms of women's martial arts, and then just goes on a four fight skid. And it's just like, you know, when you get to this ladder and you fight the top of the division, you start falling down. It seems like she's just going to keep tumbling, you know, against lesser opponent until she's just out of this. And I don't think she's going to get another fight, honestly.
Man,
what do you think? What do you think about that? That like, problem, just, has a name.
The problem is
the sex appeal. I mean, actually makes
she's 30, she's 37 years old now, and you know, the thing is, she doesn't need to fight anymore. She's got 1.6 million followers on Instagram, which,
okay,
yeah, I know, it's absolutely obscene. Well, and that's all.
Like she's getting another fight.
Yeah, well, that's part of the reason. She's got a website. Oh, would you like to go? Let's have a quick look at the Michelle Waterson official store. Would you like to buy? No, it's Michelle Waterson apparel, apparently. Oh, men's. Actually, let's have a look what she's saying. Oh, here we go. Okay. I don't think I'll be buying any of this merchandise, but I'm sure it's a well put together website. I'm sure she doesn't need money from fighting anymore. She's, you know, she's a character. She seems like an extremely nice person. She's very, very popular. She just doesn't need to be taking these kind of beatings anymore. And as you said, she's 37 years old. She's a bit of a one-dimensional fighter. She's had a good career. The new wave of fighters are coming in now, and they're all they're not one-dimensional. They're not getting put over and promoted just because of their looks, like Paige Van Zandt, like who's the Aussie chick? Jess.
She's just been cut as well, isn't she?
Yeah. Well, surprise. Yeah. So. Tough times for Michelle Waterson, but tell you what, let's not sleep on Marina Rodriguez, because that was a very, very nice performance, and she bounced back because, yeah, she got absolutely murked. She got murked by Amanda Lemos, but before that, she was on a good winning streak. And then to lose to Verna Jandiroba, who we can categorically say is not there for her looks, looking like Rob, what's his name? Adam Sandler's buddy.
Rob Schneider. Yeah.
Rob Schneider. That Rob Schneider looking lady. She's definitely not there, man, for a look. She's there because she can scrap, and she does it to a very high level, 19-3. But yeah.
She's good, man. But like, I mean, she's always got one eye on the clock, one eye on the opponent. You know, measure a gas tank pretty well. Cheat code.
Yeah, so a nice win for Marina Rodriguez. Had I known Brian Battle was getting a full body Dragon Ball Z tattoo that was going all around his back and down his arm with the Dragon Balls, I would have max bet everything I had on him, because no one can lose with that power.
I'm in for Pooh Bear, man. He looked fucking. I don't know if it's just he's big for this weight class, or if AJ Fletcher is just tiny for this weight class, which I think he is. I think they said he has the shortest reach of anyone in that weight class.
Yeah, I think it's both, though, because what weight did this took place at welterweight? Didn't Brian Battle compete at middleweight on The Ultimate Fighter, if I recall correctly?
Well, he's listed as a welterweight in the UFC.
I think. He fought in the Ultimate Fighter.
Middleweight.
Yeah, he did. And he was just a small guy, and he won. It was like, okay, he's going to get down to he fought at middleweight in his UFC debut. Tréshawn Gorn, middleweight. And then he came down, got performance of the night against Takashi Sato at welterweight. And he's gone 3-1 since his move down to welterweight inside the UFC. He looks great. I'm a big fan of old Pooh Bear Brian. I think he might be going by the Butcher now, but he just looked great, and
He's increasing his skills every time as well, like which is awesome to see, because he did not look like the most well-rounded fighter when you were watching the Ultimate Fighter coming up, but obviously like having that success and then getting into the organization and maybe, you know, having better resources at your side and
100%
the people who are coming up with a bit of steam behind them and really take advantage of that. You know, there's people that are limited by their budget. Oftentimes, oftentimes they're working a job as well.
Mm-hmm.
You know, not being able to pay their training camps. But the fact that he's obviously taking advantage of that, he's upgrading his skills. He's looking deadly. He's looking composed. And he knows the right times to explode. I'm all in for him. I think he's got a great future.
Completely agree, bro. And that's one of the best reasons, the biggest reasons, you know, I don't want to get down a rabbit hole of fighter pay, but this is one of the arguments I would say that if you get signed to the UFC roster, not on a short notice replacement, they should pay you a stipend where it's enough to subsist like $40,000-$50,000 a year. And they just pay you that as basically a retainer to allow you to step away from whatever job you're doing. And most of the time for fighters, it's a shitty job because, like, let's say professional white collar careers or other types of jobs don't mesh with being able to train in the mornings and the evenings and what you need to do. So they're working shitty jobs with hourly pay just to pay their bills, to fund their training camps, to chase their dream. The quality of fighting would go up immeasurably if at the lower ends of the roster, if all of these guys were full-time professional fighters and it wouldn't cost the UFC a lot of money to do that. So I really think they should do that. And it also happens when people become champion as well. All of a sudden, they take another big step forward because there's revenue streams available to them that were never there before. Mm-hmm. And they can afford to improve their nutrition, improve their strength and conditioning, travel around the country or the world to different fight camps, bring and pay sparring partners to come in and work with them. So yeah, more money means better training and means an ability to improve your skill set. And Brian Battler's certainly taken that momentum from the Ultimate Fighter, got his strength, got his fitness in order, come back down to welterweight, and he looks better than ever. I'm really impressed with him. Really nice to see.
I think there's something to be said about the mental clarity that you're going to get from, you know, having less pressure on you as well. So if you have less pressure, you know, to supply for your family, Francis Ngannou was just talking about this on the Rogan podcast recently, and he's talking about like the main thing being the mindset, and then also like, you know, your skills are there, you can work out in the gym, and you've got the physicality, and it gets to a point there, but then there's extra little things that you're building on top of this, which make it even better. So the main thing being, if you've got this championship mindset, you want to be in there, you want to be, you know, you want to be a champion, you want to be a fighter, and then you've obviously got skills to match that, but then yeah, as you said, you're just tacking on these extra percentages, and it's like, you know, you've got the extra mental freedom, knowing that your family's supported, you've got the nutrition behind you, you've got everything else, and that's all just extra bits that they're going to stack on to make a full, well-rounded, and it gives you the best chance to actually have success in the industry. And I think a lot of these guys that we see that don't take advantage of that or don't get the opportunity to increase those percentages, these great fighters, they just fall off, and you know, they don't have the chance to even become champions. So yeah, let's hope that more of this sort of stuff happens.
Yeah, on a similar vein, I think there's also an argument to have finish bonuses instead of win bonuses as well, because I think that will lead always to more exciting fights and fighters looking for finishes. Whereas he was pretty open about it. For example, Chris Duncan, I interviewed him for Combat Sports UK, and he said for his UFC debut, all he cared about was getting the win. And he said, I played a boring defensive fight because all that mattered to me was getting the extra 50% of his pay, the win bonus, because that was the difference for him of going back to of becoming a full-time professional fighter or having to do personal training alongside to supplement his income. And that difference, the extra 20,000 or 15,000 pounds or whatever it was the difference between going back to work on Monday as a personal trainer and training full time. And who's able to, you know, and the results speak for themselves. He's gone on leaps and bounds. So hopefully as the sport continues to evolve and grow, we see more of that.
For sure.
Yeah. Quick note. Not much really to talk about in the fight itself, which is a very nice guillotine submission win by Charles Jourdain. Mm-hmm. Snatched the neck of Ricardo Ramos, black belt in Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu, always a feather in the cap to get a submission win over a Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu black belt. Sure. So that's a nice win. That's a nice win for Charles Jourdain, who's, you know, looking to put a couple of wins together here after dropping decisions, one-sided decisions to Shane Burgos and Nathaniel Wood. So good. Yeah, very good fight. Great to see from Charles Jourdain.
Miles Johns, man.
Yeah, pretty good win over Dan Argueta. And to be honest, I thought Argueta might get it done, but it wasn't to be.
And he was literally just like Dan Argueta had a decent enough game plan of wearing him down. And Miles Johns is looking pretty tired throughout this fight, even though he's like striking. But Dan Argueta was fucking blocking everything with his face. He's walking down, hands down, like, you know, he's obviously a great grappler and a great wrestler, and you know, he's got a game plan is the pressure. But every single time Miles Johns is just striking him and he's blocking everything with his big fucking chin. And it was,
I was gonna say, yeah, yeah, you would as well if you had an iron chin like that. He's basically a little Johnny Bravo, isn't he, with that absolute monstrous Stan Smith Johnny Bravo Drew Dober like looking chin. Just unbelievable. And I can't believe that he isn't actually, like, I genuinely thought he was part of Team Alpha Male. I was very disappointed to find out that he was in fact fighting out of Jackson Winklejohn, because that man has got Team Alpha Male written all over him. I mean, yeah. I just can't believe it. He's the kind of guy that they're absolutely growing in the lab back there. Uriah Faber, after every practice, come around and scoops up the sweat and the blood and goes into the back of the cloning lab there, just trying to grow new little alpha males. And Dan Argueta looks like he's a byproduct of that.
Yeah, man. I think they actually have like a quota of how much chin they can have in that gym. They probably can't get it all through the front door. So, I mean, like, after Uriah Faber fucking squeaks on him with his big bum chin, like, there's only a certain amount of amount left. Where does Drew Dober train at?
Oh, that's a great question. Let's find that out, because it's not Team Alpha Male. Theory.
Oh, it's not. Well, there you go. Maybe that's the thing.
That's part of the problem. He's fighting out of Denver, Colorado, apparently. I'm not sure what gym he's affiliated with, but he's not. That's probably, you know, that could probably be the, he's fighting Ricky Glenn soon, but that could have been the, you know, the tonic to his problems against Matt Frivolo. If he had been at Team Alpha Male, they could have, do you think it's like, you know, one of those cartoons where they all put the rings together and it evolves into something bigger? After every practice, they all get together and touch their chins together, and it just strengthens the resolve.
With our power combined.
With our great chins combined. Nice win for Miles Johns, though. And, He gave a nice little speech afterwards. Clearly, his wife's brother seemingly committed suicide some years ago, and he used that platform to commemorate what would have been his birthday. So, you know, very, very nice of him. I'm pointing at him to do that. Mm. Andre Fiallo versus Tim Means. Oh no, I was high on Andre Fiallo for a while. He came in, was just dropping dudes, just handing fists like hammers, and very one-dimensional, and he had Means hurt once or twice early on, but Tim Means is a dog. He's a dirty bird. He's the dirty bird, but he's the dirty dog. Tim Means, my goodness, that was very, very good performance, and he ended up folding Fiallo. That's probably Fiallo done in the UFC, but he does walk out of the door most likely with 50K in his back pocket as fight of the night bonus, because it was an entertaining fight. And you know what? I couldn't believe this. I was like, oh, Tim Means, he's been in the UFC forever. He must be dripping in post-fight bonuses. Dude has like three, and he has like 20-something fights in the UFC. We've got to pull this shit up. Pull that shit up, Jamie. Holy shit, you're Jamie. I can say that to you now.
Yeah, got you covered. Oh man, yeah. So Andre, it's like, you know, coming in with two wins and then losing his last four. It's a bit of a shame, man, because like every fight he's in, it looks good. Like he doesn't look shit, and he's got some great power, and he's an exciting fighter. It's just he just keeps getting fucking murdered. And Tim Means, god damn, what a violent son of a bitch. It was such a pleasure to watch him just break him down, actually. So yeah, god damn.
Yeah, man. 100%. And Tim Means is one of those guys now. That was his 28th fight in the UFC. He'd lost three in a row, but one of those was a split decision against Max Griffin. I thought he won that fight. He's not going anywhere. If he wants to stay and fight with the UFC as long as he possibly can, then he's going to get them. But yeah, he's got like three post-fight bonuses in 28 fights, which is just crazy because it's seemingly he's always in great scraps, like always, always in fun, awesome, scrapping fights, whether he wins, loses, draws, no contest, whatever's going on. So happy to see him get a bonus.
Matt Brown vibes, you know, like just men with sharp elbows and just like...
Absolutely. Absolutely. That man is nails. He'll never complain about anything. But someone who did complain voraciously, and he should be fucking ashamed of himself, is Cody Brundage. Stealing from the plate of Jacob Malkoon and all Jacob Malkoon bettors. That was fucking atrocious. He was getting dominated by Malkoon, who somehow happens to be the greatest MMA wrestler in the world. Just you'd think when you go, oh, best MMA wrestler, and your mind wanders to maybe the mats of a D1 school, like a Bo Nickel, or the mountains of the Caucasus at the regions of Dagestan and Islam Makhachev. No. It is one Mr. Jacob Malkoon fighting out of the scrappy plains of Australia. And my goodness, he is an absolute beast. Is he exciting? Probably not. Does he get finishes? Not really. I mean, he's the antithesis of what you would say is an exciting fighter. But my goodness, he's effective at what he does, and he does it well. And okay, yeah, he threw a stupid shot. He was trying to roll the guy and time the elbow. He couldn't get the turn of the head. And he landed the forearm in the back of Cody Brundage's head. And my goodness, that boy milked it. Now, it was Malkoon's fault.
Sure.
But holy cow, that was absolutely pathetic. He didn't even for a split second attempt to win that or to resume that fight. Because you know why? He knew he was getting absolutely dog-walked and he'd lost three in a row. This was about to be four. Bye-bye, out of the UFC. And quite frankly, this might not save him. This is the kind of thing where the UFC brass go, you know what? We don't want you here. Not with that kind of performance. You're not actually a top tier level fighter. You don't belong here. And I'm just the fact that they called it a win and it was a disqualification instead of a no contest. It wasn't intentional. Oh
no! I mean, like when you see people who are like, you know, they're given nut shots, the eye poking and stuff like that, and then it's just a no contest. That is so much. That's so egregious. Like, you know, I mean, I get a knock to the back of the head. You know, it's dangerous. You can kill a guy, but you can also, you know, you can gouge someone's eye out if you're poking him in the eye. Especially in a couple of fights recently, it's happened a couple of times. It's in recent history. There's been some really fucked up eye gouges, and they are classed as no contests. Why the fuck is this person winning when it's and especially when there's a forearm involved, right? So if it's to the back of the head, throwing an elbow, obviously you've done something wrong. But why, when there's like a ref cam afterwards, right? Like people can review this afterwards. Surely there's a place where they can say, look, all right, so this was clearly egregious. He went and smashed him with the elbow. It's going to be a disqualification. Or can they not just say, all right, well, looks like he didn't mean to do it. It looks like it hit him with a forearm. This guy's obviously milking it. We'll just call it a no contest and you guys can set up this fight again.
Yeah, why is run it back.
Why is this? I mean, you know, obviously, like you think about, you know, Aljo and the Peter Yan fight, and when these sort of things come to mind in recent history for like impactful things and wins, and that changed the course of that division's history by this.
Yeah,
and as you said, it's taken money. It's taken money out of this guy's pocket. It's taken food off his family's plate. When he was dominating that fight with something that was clearly not intentional. It's but I mean, afterwards, he's like, what was he saying? Oh, they're gonna think I'm weak or something like that, something along those lines. They're gonna. Of course, they fucking are, because you know what the rules are. You know that you're milking this. You know that you're taking this guy's spot, and you know you're gonna get cut if you don't do it. So I mean, he's put in a rough situation, but honestly, man, yeah, as you said, I don't know if that's gonna save him, if the UFC are gonna tolerate that shit, because it's so. It's gross. It's gross to see.
Yeah, man. Derek Brunson tweeted, Cody Brundage got the win and didn't even have to throw a strike. And then, Ode Osborne said, you got to want it. And some people are fighters and some people. And yeah, pretty interesting for him to tweet that out.
Look, just go into another organization, man. I mean, if you're talking about the cream of the crop, the people that do want to be here, and obviously it doesn't suit you to be in the top organization if that's your attitude towards fighting another man. There are plenty of other people there that are more driven, that want to be in there. Some crazy motherfuckers, you know, that want to be in this position. It's not the mentality.
If I'm the UFC, I go to Cody Brundage and I say, rematch Jacob Malkoon or your time with us is done. Like, that's the only thing. That's the right thing to do. I think
a better idea would just be to give to treat this as a no contest and just give Jacob Malkoon another opponent that's going to keep him on the trajectory upwards.
I hope, yeah, or that, yeah, and also. You
don't
know,
give this guy anymore.
Side pay him is win bonus as well, because yeah, it's a rough one. It's a rough
especially,
one
for, especially when you're winning the fight, man. That's the kicker. I think it's like, you know, if it was going one way or the other, maybe there's more of an argument for it. But yeah, no. Anyway, I want to touch upon this, the Muhammad Usman versus Jake Collier fight, man. What are your thoughts on that one?
I hate Muhammad Usman with a burning passion. The dude absolutely stinks, and he somehow backdoors his way into wins in the UFC. And I got everyone thinking, because of his last name, that he's actually a good fighter. I've never seen such a discrepancy in sibling talent. It is so unbelievable that these guys are related. Muhammad Usman should quit fighting and go into the medical fraud game with his father, because it's ridiculous. He's also like 80 years old. He's clearly on all kinds of gas. Like, it's just ridiculous. Meanwhile, he gets in there with Jake, the sack of milk Collier, who should be a middleweight, but the dude just likes to eat and fights at heavyweight instead. Unbelievable. While everyone's trying to get down to the lowest weight classes, Jake Collier's like, I got one more in me. And he's like, get me up another weight class. It's absolutely incredible.
It's tragic. And man, you know what was a little bit sad about this was that Jake Collier, like, not an athletic specimen by any means, going up against, you know, this like, yeah, as you said, he looks like he's on all the gas, but you know, this is all speculation. He was winning that fight, and then
he was piecing it up.
Yeah, and then suddenly it's like, oh, I'm going to eye gouge this man. And then suddenly it's like, oh, Muhammad's got a slick jab on him and his jab's starting to work. Yeah, because the guy can't fucking see.
Not only can he not see, but Muhammad Usman, he has a shitty gas tank because of his ridiculous muscle mass. He got 4.5 minutes to rest and recover after clearly being tired and being outclassed by Jake Collier, who, by the way, is now on a four-fight losing streak. Fuck. He got 4.5 minutes to recover. Jake Collier couldn't see anymore, and it completely changed the course of the fight. Not only that, he didn't get a point taken away. Intentional or not, when you hinder the person with one of the worst eye gouges, probably second only to Justin Taffer's in recent memory, You got to take a point away. You have to take a point away to reflect the disadvantage that Jake Collier is at for the remainder of the fight. So that forces Usman to try and go did this go for a finish? I can't even remember. No, decision. So that has to force Usman to not rest on his laurels and go for a decision. It's sickening. It makes me so annoyed for Jake Collier, because this, again, is he one of the best in the night? In the division, excuse me. No, he's not. But now that's five losses in his last six fights, which of course doesn't look great. And that could have been the one win over. And Usman is, because of the work that his brother's done, Muhammad Usman is a big name in this division. And a win over him could have been, you know, that could have been a new 3-fight contract for Jake Collier. Fortunately for him, I don't know what's going to happen. And he was winning that fight, and he should have won that fight. And it's a disgrace that it played out this way.
Yeah, it's a shame. And like, you know, as we were just saying before about, like, you know, mindsets and wanting to be there. If you get an eye poke like that, you heard the scream that came out of that,
bro,
man. That was
bro,
serious.
Dark.
That's fucking blood curdling. It reminded me of the Bilal Muhammad. Like it gave me this feeling, and it just gives me the sweats when that sort of stuff happens. But the fact is, he fucking stayed in that fight. I think the UFC, I think they appreciate the guys that are like this. They don't just, you know, sit back and wait for the fight to just be ended or anything like that. No, he continued. He took the time. It sort of seemed like everyone's a little bit confused about the time frames and everything like that. And, you know, obviously different states have different and different places have different rules and whatever regarding this with the athletic commissions, but like it just showcases his character to stay in that fight. So even if he is
what a contrast, huh? Jake, yeah. Collier, Cody Brundage. If you're looking at a guy who's like on Cut City and you go, let's keep one of these around. If you're a businessman, if your job is you're in the business of promoting and putting guys out there to fight, who do you think? Who are you going to give the edge to here on guys who are on the edge of relevancy? You're going to give it to the guy who looked in agony. Bro, I thought the fight was over for sure when he fell over and was like, doubled up, and it was bad, but he showed that he wanted to be in there. And he also, after the second round was over, he was all pieced up, he was bleeding, because all of a sudden Muhammad Usman looked like Muhammad Ali and was firing off shots left, right, and center. Jake Collier was all busted up, bleeding everywhere. He could have easily gone, actually, you know what, I can't see, I'm done. And he went in there and he still scrapped and he fought. And I tell you what, if you're running an organization, you're always gonna back those guys, and you're always gonna say they're the kind of people that I want to put on my event. Someone who, even if the adversity is stacked against them, they're gonna go out there and still try and fight because that's their character, that's their makeup. They do not melt at the signs of adversity. So all respect.
You get the Sam Alveys, right? You get the smiling Sam Alveys who stay in the organization. Bro. It doesn't matter how many losses they, because the guys are just like, you're always in here to fight. You know why you're here. And I think that is why this organization's so great. It's not just a lose three fights, you're out. No, if you've got this mindset and you prove yourself and you always want to be there and you take it on the chin and you do it with respect, and man, I think there's always a place for these people. And I think, so it's great to see that attitude.
100%, man. The UFC puts.
Sorry.
Go on. No, go on.
I just wanted to touch upon the fact that there's such a discrepancy between like siblings. There's such a even in Bellator recently, actually. What was it last night? Fabian Edwards.
Don't dog my man Fabian like that.
At
least he got up there and fought for the title, and he also left a hole in Johnny Eblen's head. Yeah, he came up short. But the gap between Leon and Fabian. Beyond Leon and Fabian is nowhere near the gap between but it's crazy though, right? That like the there can be such discrepancy between those guys.
Well, off the top of your head, what else you got? I come to think of the Shevchenkos. That's a big discrepancy, isn't it?
That's a big discrepancy. Yeah, yeah.
And you got the Dorcases. Not a huge discrepancy there, but
In size, yes. A love of getting knocked out inside the UFC.
someone got breastfed.
That's a good one. The Diaz brothers, similar.
Yeah, exactly.
Similar.
Not too far off on that. I think you got
who
the,
else?
You got the Basharats.
There's three of them. They're all very similar, and they're all
very good. Yeah.
They're all very good, and they all look like Nigel Thornberry.
They all got it as well.
Smashing.
Yeah, well, it's just kind of crazy. I thought there would be more of a, you know, obviously, like, you know, you think about John Jones and stuff like that, and his brothers, and they're just like, you know, there's there's a genetic line there that just like screams for success, but just sometimes there's these ones that just fall off completely. And I don't know if it's because there's just a lack of time spent doing that, or if it's just they fell in line with the career successes of the person that was already doing it, and then we have an expectation as an audience to, for them to succeed. And then they just don't, and then they fall short. So I'm not sure what the factors are for them to be such a huge discrepancy with, you know, the Usmans, with the Shevchenkos, with the So it's
funny, huh? It's it is. That's the card. We're not even we're not talking about those two boring ass decisions. They did those fights didn't even happen. But there isn't a card next week. The UFC is taking a short break, and so there's no fight card to preview. The next one will be another Apex fight night, unfortunately. Grant Dawson versus Bobby Green. This is not one that I'll be staying up through the night to watch. There are some decent fights on, you know, through the card. Joe Pyfer against Abdul Razak Al-Hazan, guaranteed banger. Alex Morono, Joaquin Buckley, guaranteed banger. Alexander Hernandez versus Bill Algeo, guaranteed banger. Archie Long versus Johnny Munoz Jr., guaranteed banger. So there's some good cards, fights on there. Just not me willing to stay up till 4 o'clock in the morning to watch them. However, Dana White has been all over social media, firing off fight announcements left, right, and center. And I've got to say, I love it. This is the best way for fight announcements to happen. They keep them close to the chest, and then Dana jumps on social and is just firing them out off the hip, just like, this is happening. And I just absolutely love it. And boy, do we have some great fights in store to close out the year. And I'm talking numbered events, pay-per-views. There are some good fight nights scattered around as well. But of course, we've got UFC 294 coming up, going back to Abu Dhabi, the rematch, Islam Makhachev versus Charles Oliveira, Paulo Costa versus Hamzat Chimaev. Banger, 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 banger. But UFC 295, the return of the greatest heavyweight of all time, Stipe Miocic taking on Jones. It needed a co-main event, and they were looking at Colby Covington versus Leon Edwards, but John Jones fucking hates Colby Covington, and they can't be in the same building together, which is absolutely amazing, by the way. I absolutely love that the UFC can't put them in the same building. So what do? Let's take John Jones's old belt, the one that he formed his legacy around, and it's now vacant. Jiří Procházka returning from his nasty injury, taking on former middleweight champion Alex Pereira for the vacant belt. What an absolutely sensational, striking, banquet, feast that is going to be. What an incredible card that
I'm
is going to be.
Jiří, man, I'm all in for Jiří. I just love him. I love wacky, wild characters that fight in the woods. Like, I'm just all in for that. And then Alex Pereira as well. I mean, like, he's a wild, wacky guy from the woods also.
Dude, two absolute unhinged lunatics who are going to go in there and throw down. It's going to be absolutely incredible. Alex Pereira is going to be in there hunting revenge for Pereira beating Glover Teixeira, for Prochazka beating Glover Teixeira as well. Just absolutely incredible. And, you know, other good fights on this card, but an absolute banger on tap. Matt Frivola versus Benoit Saint-Denis, PSD. And I called it last time, most dangerous man, the without question, the most savage, the most ruthless, the most vicious man inside the octagon, Benoit Saint-Denis, taking on the people's champion, the people's favorite, one of the funnest, most entertaining guys you'll see out there, Matt Frivola, the steamroller. Feast for, you know, Matt Frivola is now ranked. He's on a tear. They were trying to get the fight between Frivola and Paddy Pimblett rocking. That didn't happen. Now, people are saying that Paddy's probably ducked Matt Frivola, and Frivola's been calling him out for ages. I'd like to think, as a, you know, as a Paddy Pimblett fan, that he's not ducking Frivola, but the fact that he's accepted to fight a month later and has always said, if he fights this year, it will be in December, whereas Frivola was desperate to fight on the New York card at Madison Square Garden, being a native New Yorker from Huntington, New York. It made more sense for Frivola to be on that card, and Paddy Pimblett gets his fight against Tony Ferguson. I also think after a year layoff, coming off the questionable decision against Jared Gordon, you probably don't deserve to get a fight in the top 15 rankings either. So that factored into the decision as well. So that fight is going to be an absolute banger between Matt Frivola and Benoit Saint-Denis. And I'm just There's no loser. No one loses in that fight. The people mm-hmm. win, and the loser will put on an absolute performance as well. So that's going to be an absolute banger. And then, of course, UFC 296 took close out the year. I mentioned one of those already, but main event, Leon Rocky Edwards defends his title against Colby Covington, who does he deserve the shot? Probably not. Will he help sell pay-per-views? You sure as shit he will. So I want Leon Edwards to get his cut, to get his pay-per-view points, to make all that money. And mm-hmm. having spent all of this time preparing and training for Kamaru Usman and becoming extremely good at takedown defense, Colby Covington is going to have his work cut out to see if Leon Edwards against Leon Edwards, because he is so much bigger than Covington. He is stronger. He striking outclasses him. It's going to be a great, great fight. Oh, and if that wasn't enough, co-main, banger on tap, flyweight championship of the world, Alexandre Pantoja against Brandon Royval.
I'm so happy that Royval's getting this opportunity, man. That's fucking awesome. I mean, that's going to be an absolute fucking banger as well. I can't wait for all of these cards, man.
It's ridiculous. It's absolutely obscene. Got Tony Ferguson versus Paddy Pimblett. And just if that wasn't enough for you, oh my goodness, we've just had another fight announced for this card. But Dana announced Shavkat Rakhmonov versus Stephen Thompson. Shavkat, mm-hmm. that's going to be a huge notch in his belt, I think, if he takes out Stephen Thompson. Oh, that isn't enough for you? How about some Vicente Luque versus Ian Garry?
Oh man, it's all coming together, baby. It's all coming together.
It's all coming up, Milhouse. I absolutely love it.
It is. It does sort of almost feel like the calm before the storm a little bit with this, like, you know, with this bye week here. You know, obviously a couple of a fair few fight nights in a row. You know, good, like, you know, great top of the cards for a lot of these cards. But then it's just like towards the end of the year, they're really going ham with all these. I think you're probably right about the Paddy thing. He's probably I think the conspiracy theorist within you probably has a little bit of a shine towards the him skipping Matt Frivola, getting in on Tony Ferguson, who's obviously on a wild skid at the moment on the back end of his career, arguably should retire, but you know, I don't think anyone's gonna
it's
be
a great fight. It makes sense. Paddy's a name. Paddy's a big name. You build him, you give him a win, you hopefully get him a win over Tony Ferguson. But what puzzles me is, on one hand, everyone's like, Paddy Pimblett is a can, he's shit, he's the most overrated fighter ever, and then on the other hand they're saying, no, don't do this to Tony, we, you know, he doesn't deserve to go out like this. It's like, hold on a minute, Paddy Pimblett's as bad as you say he is, then Tony Ferguson is a very live underdog. So let's see what happens. This is a huge, if Paddy doesn't run through Tony Ferguson, it's over. Like the whole shtick, it's all over. He's made his bag, great, get in, get out. But it's over for Paddy Pimblett if he doesn't convincingly beat Tony Ferguson and then do a great call out on the microphone as well. If he loses to Tony Ferguson, pack it up, go home. It's all over.
I want to talk about what the crowd that's going to be at this event, the UFC 296. It's in England, right? It's in the O2.
No. It's in Vegas.
Man.
Yeah, it's in Vegas.
You should have put that in the UK. You got Ian Garry, man. You got the Leon. You got Paddy. That would just be fucking wild. I mean, we obviously went to an event in the O2 as well, and just being in that atmosphere. It's happening a lot lately. Where the commentators, where the desk, they're talking about the energy taken off the cans, and the noise-proof headphones are not working in some of these places, and it's getting fucking wild, man. And I'm loving it. Everywhere's selling out. What you got? Tell me.
I'm just flicking forward to see some of the fights that have been made on the fight nights.
Yeah.
First, two things. One, other. Fighting brothers, the Bonfim brothers, Ishmael and Gabriel, both very good. This is on the UFC Fight Night, Curtis Blaydes versus Jailton Almeida in Brazil, which is going to be great. My guy Modestus Bukauskas heading out there to take on Vitor Petrino, but I did not see. We just talked about her before. Angela Hill is fighting Denise Gomes, who I said before, the best compliment that I can pay Denise Gomes is she fights like a dude. She just comes out and throws the fuck down. And poor Angela Hill is gonna be brought home from Brazil in a body bag.
Dude, like, just seeing the record of 15 wins, 13 losses, what the fuck are you doing in this organization, man? It's like, I love that she's been an active fighter. I love that that's happening. But when you're talking about like the top level of fighting caliber, and when you look at like the ONE Championship and you see these girls fucking throw down, like, you know, these absolute menacing girls in the Asian region, man, it is wonderful to see. And then you see, if this is the top level of competition, it's fucking,
I got it, yeah. I've got to give her credit though, because, you know, we talked about people who want to be in there and people who want it. Angela yep. Hill took a beating yep. off Mackenzie Dern and stayed in there the entire fight, which is why she's been, and I feel for it, because she's going against Denise Gomes, who's coming off the Contender Series. She lost her first fight against Loma Lukbunmi, but Loma is a Muay Thai champion. And it's like, okay, she lost the decision. She stayed in there. And then she came out and she murked Bruna Brazil, and then she beat Yasmin Uruguay in 20 seconds, if that was on the Volkanovski versus Yair Rodriguez fight. I will be hammering the Denise Gomes by stoppage line on Bet365, because it's happening. It is happening for sure. And I'm so excited to see that fight. And that's a great fight. And then we get, that's the prelude to Jones versus Miocic. That's happening on mm-hmm. November 11th. Then we get Paul Allen, Brendan Allen versus
Paul Craig.
Yes. Headlining. Unfortunately, that's going to be Apex, but that's going to be a really good fight. And a ton of interesting fights have been announced for that one by the looks of things. And then UFC Fight Night 233 doesn't have a main event yet, but that's got Veronica Hardy back on there, Rob Font versus Davison Figueiredo, Khalil Rountree Jr. versus Azamat Mirzakhanov, Jared Cannonier versus Roman Dolidze. Oh, that's going to be the main event, I think. Cannonier versus Dolidze will be the main event.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah, and then there's one more fight night. That's going to be, it's going to be in China. December 9th. When did that get announced?
I'm not sure.
A few days ago.
It's not even on the Yeah, because I mean they
UFC 16th of September. Yeah, UFC returns for
must be
to China. Your boy had that scoop a while ago. But nonetheless, yeah.
Man, lots to look forward to. I'm so excited. Even as I said, these fight nights are just going off, man. I'm actually keen to see the Bobby Green and the Joe Pfeiffer fight next week. It'll give us a nice little taste of the things to come. I'm excited to see what else they do on the Leon card as well, because obviously they haven't built that one out properly yet. But you know, obviously a little bit of time before December. But goddamn, dude. I wanted to ask you about what you think is going to happen in the middleweight division now that where Rob Whittaker sort of fits in all this. I feel like he should be next to fight Strickland. What do you think? And I think Drickus should fight Izzy, and that would be what I would do, because Rob doesn't look like he's got a, does he have a fight lined up?
Rob can't fight for the belt after getting fucking manhandled by Drickus du Plessis and yeah. stopped. Like, it's not possible. But the problem is, if Sean Strickland beats du Plessis, the Izzy fight kind of goes away, but yeah, then does exactly. it. I don't know, man.
It's weird, huh?
I don't know. It is weird.
Or do you wait for Cannonier to beat Dolidze and then you give... If he does.
It
all seems like there's going to be a... I think Dana's probably keen for the rematch.
He's keen for the rematch, but I also think Izzy needs to take some time off. The rematch is always going to be big with Izzy, because Izzy's a star. Yeah. So whether Strickland's got the title or not, that can be... So you give it... Whichever way it happens, this is what I UFC's in a win-win situation.
Yeah.
Either Izzy and Strickland rematch, and Izzy wins the belt, and then you do Izzy versus du Plessis. Du Plessis versus Strickland, and let's be honest, I think we all back du Plessis to beat Sean Strickland, because of the way he fights. He's a forward pressure fighter, unlike Izzy, who likes to go backwards. And I just think he'd probably be able to overwhelm, especially now he's a mythical fighter that he can breathe out of his nose.
Yeah, great.
And so And so if he wins the belt, you then set that up with Izzy coming back to challenge Du Plessis. You do that fight in Africa. It's one of the biggest events of all time. So the UFC is probably in a win-win situation. The only spanner in the works is if Du Plessis fights Strickland and loses, and then that takes the shine away from Izzy versus Du Plessis just a touch. And then you have to send Izzy back for the belt. You have to give Du Plessis maybe another fight, yeah, maybe Cannonier or Dolidze, and then navigate your way back to that. The reality is they're big personalities, all of them. Sean Strickland's become a star in his own right. Mm-hmm. Dricus du Plessis is becoming a star, and Israel's a star. There's no wrong decision. Yeah. There's no bad way this can play out. It's all going to be great.
Yeah, that's true. It's just chaos, man. We're in the weird timeline. Things are happening, and we'll just have to see how things play out. It's literally, you cannot predict how these things are going to go at this stage, in so many different facets of this. And this is why we love this sport, huh? It's wild and wonderful, and always up in the air. What else we got?
Exactly, man. Exactly. Now hold on. Dave, does anyone have any stupid questions for me? Dana says, has anyone have any stupid questions for me? Dana reacts to talks of UFC event in China and Ireland. Who knows? Who knows? Bloody hell. Anyway, let's see. Mate, anything else, or should we wrap things up?
Yeah, I think we're done, man. I think that was that was nice. Tell the people what they want to hear. How do we find us?
Right. At punchdrunkpod _ on Twitter, at punchdrunkpod on Instagram. If you go to YouTube, you can find us at punchdrunkpod with 2 D's. Make sure you like us. Make sure you subscribe. Give us a follow. Give us a 5-star rating. Tell your friends. Tell your mom. Tell your nan. Tell your dad all about Punch Drunk. You know they will love it. We are your favorite combat sports podcast. You can follow Jamie at Jamie Trezellian on Instagram. His name is there on the YouTube screen because no one actually knows how to spell that last name. You can find me at Lewis Glover MMA on Twitter and Instagram as well. Thank you, everyone who tunes in and listens. We really appreciate it. And we look forward to getting back in your earballs very soon. Peace.
Cheers.